everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Meta. I'm your host, Jay Larson, and this week I have a very special treat for you. One, Trent Dennison is joining us through the magic of the interwebs all the way from Australia. Hello, Trent.
Hi, Jay. How are you?
I am well. So, Trent, why don't you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Sure. So, my name's Trent, from Australia. I live in a beautiful place called Brisbane. For many, many years, I participated in a lot of different games, Warhammer Fantasy, War Machine, Guild Ball, and competed at some international events in a lot of those game systems, which was fun. These days, I spend a lot more of my time playing board games, don't play too many miniature games anymore, and doing a little bit of painting as well. So.
A little bit of painting. I love that, like, this is the one time in my life that Trent Dennison has ever decided to be humble.
Look, I was always very, very good at miniature games and wasn't afraid to talk about it. But the simple truth is I'm not as good as I would like to be at painting, and so I don't tend to bang on about my own painting as much as I did about my own magnificent Warhammer skills and War Machine skills.
Well, one thing I'll say with the painting is that as someone who is purely a layman, I look at some of the things that you're painting, and I think that they look amazing, obviously. You have done things like traveled internationally to take classes, and as someone who I think it's fair to say that you have somewhat of an obsessive personality.
Yes. I used to host a podcast called Oz Machine. People probably listen to your show know that. But we did actually talk about this on the show. Moopsy, Ben and I, we all obsess about things. And so after I sort of gave away miniature gaming and moved into painting and board gaming, it's just basically become the obsession, the thing that I spend all my time doing and thinking about. And, you know, anytime you have that sort of mentality about something, you'll definitely improve over time. So I've definitely improved.
Yeah. And one of the things that I think is interesting about it is that there are a few exceptions, but in general, you usually have, like, over here on one side, like the hardcore gamers who, you know, some of them are okay at painting, but in general, they're not like world-class painters. And then on the other side, you have, like, these amazing painters who, you know, they probably enjoy the game.
Are we allowed to swear, mate?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, they're shit-house at the game, is what you're trying to say.
well, I'm not sure I'd go that far. but it's pretty rare to see someone who can be good at both. And so that's, I guess, a compliment to you that you've been able to do that.
Yeah, no, it's... I don't know. The interesting thing is I always thought of myself as a painter. I never really thought of myself as a gamer. And as time went on and I continued to practice and play lots of games, you know, obviously got better. And but I always thought of myself as a painter. So, yeah, it's interesting the way that things have turned out.
So I guess this will be a question to start off that just one for myself, for my own curiosity. Do you think that it's possible? Like right now, you're not really doing much of the miniature gaming. Do you think that it's possible to be like really focused on both painting and being top level at the game at the same time?
If you didn't have a full time job, yes. If your life was focused on gaming and painting, But I just don't think for most of us that that's feasible. I think you've only got so many hours in any given day. And, you know, I spend probably 2 to 3 hours painting most days. So to be able to be at the peak level of War Machine, you probably needed to spend a similar amount of time researching lists, playing games, all that sort of stuff. So I would say it would be very hard for a normal person to be at the peak of both.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. One thing I'm a little bit jealous of is, so While we were on lockdown, I was doing all the shipping by myself at Discount Games Inc. And man, there was a lot of paint going out the door. And I'm a little bit jealous of, you know, you mentioned that you spend 2-3 hours a day painting. I'm jealous that I haven't been able to play a lot of these games during quarantine. And B, it's also one of the things, especially if you are trying to do like high level practice games or stuff like that, it can be difficult to get the quantity of practice or games that you would like. And so that's one thing I would imagine that's nice about painting, is that it's just you and whatever project you want to tackle whenever you want to tackle it.
Yeah, it's a very zen experience, and one of the reasons why I'm able to do it for as long as I do sort of every day is it's just, you don't really need to think, you just get to sit down and relax and enjoy it, whereas, you know, trying to get practice games and organizing them and stuff, it's much, much different. I guess you still got Vassal though. You were never much of a Vassal player though, were you?
Right, no, not as much.
Mm. That was how we used to play Vassal once or twice a week, as well as table right. games at good games against whoever was around. For me, it was Gigantor or Simon. So, yeah.
Okay, so real quick, we'll go over the format of this. We'll do our first episode, and it will be about 50 minutes or so. And then we'll have a bonus episode that will be about the same length for our Patreon backers. And the Patreon supporters have submitted a bunch of questions for us to go over with you. But the first question I have is, again, one that is my own question. And that is the most important question of all these podcasts. And that is, Trent, how is your cat doing?
Oh, Peaches, mate. She's on a rampage at the moment, actually. So about 6 months ago, I got a cat door installed in my apartment. and so she runs out of an evening and just sort of kicks around the hood, and every couple of days she'll bring me back a little present. So we've had mice and little birds and all sorts of things brought into the house, which has been fun. But no, she's fantastic. Every morning I wake up and she's asleep at my feet. She's a superstar.
I always like seeing pictures of Peaches snuggling up.
I've been working from home a lot recently, and so she's been popping on my webcams and stuff, and I was gonna go buy her a little business tie so that when she she comes on the camera she looks professional. So
excellent. All right, so on to the questions from the Patreon supporters. The first question from Settlementor says, what top tips do you have for designing army color schemes that look great at gaming length?
So there's probably two pieces of advice I would give you. And the first is it's very important that you go for something that's high contrast because it will look better from further away. So when I say high contrast, I mean value contrast, so light and dark effectively. So you want to have a light color and a dark color so that you have contrast when you look at it from a fair distance away. And then there's a lot of like color theory decisions that can come in. A lot of people stick with the complementary color schemes, you know, red, green, blue, orange, yellow, purple. But I would say you can go deeper than that and look for color schemes that are analogous or triadic and basically go. There's a lot of data research you can do on the interwebs that will give you a bit more of a definition of what those terms mean. But you just need to pick two colors and then make sure you have a light and a dark version of those two colors. So I would never go more than two colors on a color scheme. Go those two colors and then, you know, your neutral colors like skins, browns, metals and stuff. That would be the way I would approach it these days.
You mentioned online resources. Are there any online resources that have been especially valuable to you or ones that would be valuable for a beginning painter?
Yeah, there's obviously the internet's fantastic for many things, porn included. The number one resource I used when I was first starting seriously focusing on painting was a website called Massive Voodoo, which is run by a couple of German guys, and mostly Roman Lepart is the main guy. And he's just got hundreds of articles up there, step-by-steps, specific articles detailing lots of different things. But the main resource I direct people to first is actually a book. It's called Figurepedia. It's by a dude called Jeremy Bonnement Teboul. And it basically breaks down light and color and how those two things relate to miniature painting. And for me, those are the foundations, the building blocks of everything you need to know for miniature painting. So that would actually be the first resource I would recommend people go to.
A little bit of shameless self-promotion that I'll do for you, Trent. You also yourself do a Twitter feed that's quite enjoyable. You'll post things that you're working on. And you also have, do you have any streaming or YouTube?
Literally yesterday I uploaded my first painting video, and when I can finally purchase a cam link, I'll be doing some streaming of my process. But for the moment, Twitter's probably the best place to go.
Cool. So next question is from Zap Brannigan, and he says, do you have any advice for identifying a good stopping point for getting a miniature to quote-unquote tabletop quality? I have trouble finding a good stopping point, and then I get frustrated by how much time my units end up taking me.
I mean, tabletop quality is such a nebulous term, but when I was doing armies, I would basically just do one highlight, one shadow, and that would be sufficient generally. So I think if you're doing more than that, you're probably overdoing it for tabletop quality. You obviously want to spend a bit more time on the characters and the cool stuff, but one highlight, one shadow over the midterm would be my recommendation.
So one of the trends that we're seeing a little bit with gaming is, at least with miniature gaming, is that it feels like a lot of the games are kind of shrinking a little bit. You have games like Marvel Crisis Protocol, where you bring 10 models to your game, or squad-based games, etc. And I think that things fluctuate some, whatever the market's wanting at the time. But this has been a podcast focused on War Machine. And in War Machine, a lot of times you see these massive armies on there. You see units that... There's still sometimes people will take spam lists where, you know, they have 30, 40, 50 troopers that are on the model, on the table, sorry. And so I guess a little bit of a follow-up question on his is, do you have any tips when someone, let's say they're doing a new list or they're getting into a new army and they have a bunch of units that they need to paint? Do you have any advice on getting them done and I guess not having your soul crushed in the process?
I'll tell you a fun story. So a few years ago, we had a competition called the Super Series, and one of the guys I played a lot of War Machine with overseas, his name was Evan Ferris. His nickname was the Doom Bull. Long story. He decided at the last second that he wanted to play Mad Dogs of War, and so he bought 60 Doom Reavers, and then he came to Brisbane, the tournament, and forgot that the event was fully painted. so he had 60 Doom Reavers and none of them were painted. But I actually painted his whole army for him in 3 hours. Doom Reavers are obviously a relatively easy model to paint because they're just skin, pants, and weapons. But the airbrush is a pretty helpful tool when you're painting large masses of similar models. Using color schemes that allow you to use a similar wash is something that will help speed up your time. Working in batches as opposed to working on the whole batch as one as opposed to individual groups is probably going to get you through it quicker, although it is feels a bit more tedious. So, you can do 60 models in 3 hours if you know what you're doing.
That's a pretty impressive accomplishment.
Airbrush, mate. Fucking go.
I guess a follow-up on that then is, obviously, I'm sure we'd probably fill up an entire these podcasts with just talking about an airbrush, but I guess, what are there any starter airbrushes that you would recommend to people, and any starting tips with using an airbrush?
I'm pretty good with an airbrush. It's taken me a while. I started off very poorly. So the first airbrush I would recommend is an Iwata Neo. They're actually designed for beginning airbrush users. The only piece of advice you really need for airbrushing is how important diluting your paint is. You've got to understand the right dilution before you'll be able to use an airbrush effectively. So, and that's just, it's just trial and error. Like because every color that you want to use to the airbrush will react differently with that dilution. So trial and error. So get yourself an airbrush, start using it, diluting paints, and understanding what you need to do. Eventually, I would then upgrade from that Iwata Neo, which is a fairly basic brush, to something that's a little bit more detail-oriented, and that will allow you to do more stuff with it.
So, as a retailer, I'm obviously aware that there's like vast seas of various paint lines that are available for people to use. Mm. And I'm curious which paint lines you've enjoyed the most and I guess used over your career as a painter.
So I don't particularly fixate on any paint line. I tend to like specific colors within a paint line. Coal Black from P3 is an example of a color that's pretty awesome that I still use on occasion. Mostly these days I'm using a mixture of four ranges, which is Vallejo Model Color, Scale Fantasy, and Scale 75, which accounts one range, Chimera Colors, which are Italian company, and Nocturna. They're the main brands that I use, but it's sort of like specific colors from different ones of those that I use for various reasons. I use contrast paints. I use P3. I use Tamiya for some colors. I've got a variety of paints from pretty much every manufacturer just to try them out. So they're all good. They've all got strengths and weaknesses. I think probably the lesson I would try to give people is that the paints that you use doesn't matter for shit, really. It's it's how you use them. So there's various reasons to use any different range. So just practice with the one that you've got. Don't think that buying a new range is going to make you better. But as a retailer, you should buy every range because it will help you.
I will say that. So obviously, as someone who supports the arts and supports painters, I don't have a dog in this fight, but I did think that, and I guess I'm curious to get your opinion on this. I thought that the marketing that Games Workshop did with their contrast paints was brilliant.
Absolutely.
And, I have no idea if it lived up to the advertising or to their claims or not, but certainly the advertising behind it was amazing. And so I guess I'm curious to ask you, did you feel like, you might be able to state this better than I did. Some of these listeners might not be familiar with the advertising, but I guess what was kind of the thing that Games Workshop or Citadel kind of advertised or promised with the contrast paints?
So they promised They promised game-ready miniatures with one coat over your base white spray. Look, the contrast paints are actually a really, really fantastic product, but they don't live up to that expectation, I don't think. They're okay for that purpose, and I think if you were absolutely at the very beginning of your painting journey and you just wanted to get some models painted for a game, they'll do the job. But what I've found them more useful for is as sort of a more precise and saturated glaze and wash color that you can use to add a little bit more vibrancy to areas. So, and for that, I think they're probably market leading in terms of the product and what it does. There's certainly other similar products out there, but I really quite like them. So the advertising campaign was fantastic. They really thought about that, and mate, G-Dub just been fucking knocking out of the park for a couple of years now. So kudos to them.
Yeah, it's certainly. I mean, they relaunched their paint line with the contrast colors being kind of the
flagship.
Big push. Yeah, the really kind of a primary reason why they did the relaunch, and they've obviously sold very well. Are there any paint lines in particular that you feel are a little bit friendlier to starting painters?
Yeah, I mean, I would probably recommend Vallejo Model Color as the best all-round paint range in terms of the strength of the pigment, how well they apply on the model, the consistency of the finish, and the variety of color options you've got. They're my main sort of go-to range. The problem I find with P3 is they're more dilute than I would normally like to use. I like to be able to control the dilution a little bit more. And they also have a slightly satin finish, whereas the Vallejo tends to be a little bit more matte and a little bit, just a tiny bit thicker out of the paint pot, which means you can use it to use it for as a thick coat, or you can dilute it down to a slightly thinner one. So Vallejo Model Color would be the one range, if I had to pick one and one only, that I would recommend to people.
Real quick, one question about Vallejo, and I guess this is something I may be a little bit more curious about as a retailer, but one of the things I had heard about this industry was that Vallejo, as a manufacturer, they end up manufacturing paint lines for a bunch of different companies, and then those other companies call it, you know, their paint line and have their packaging, et cetera, on that. Mm-hmm. Do you know, is that correct? Or?
Yep, it is correct, yeah. So the Nocturna range, which I was talking about earlier, is actually basically just out of the Vallejo factory. They're, I think, the biggest manufacturer of miniature painting paints. And so most other companies use their services, I believe. There's a couple of ranges that you do that through their factory.
I was just curious and thought that was kind of interesting. All right, so some more Patreon questions. Gray Lord Dave says, can you do Oz Machine again, please? I still miss it.
Hello, Gray Lord Dave. Thank you for that lovely feedback. We still have a chat group, the Oz Machine fellas. We've added a few members though these days. The Big Whale's in there as well, and Axar and Koki. So look, we've talked about it. We've talked about doing another reunion episode, catching up with everyone, seeing how everyone's going. But the biggest problem with us getting back together for Oz Machine is that we're all on different paths at the moment. So Benny and Axar are playing a lot of 40K. Moopsy's obviously right back into War Machine, and up until pandemic life was looking at going overseas for the WTC along with Whaley. And I'm just kicking along with board games and painting and playing every week with Koki and my regular board game group. So it's hard to have consistency, but we did get together at CanCon and played some Blood Rage, some Nemesis, and so we were contemplating getting together for a chat about those. So we'll see. I'd like to. Nice. Great times.
Yeah.
Still the best podcast out there, mate. Was 100% the best podcast. Just
the bar's been set, and we'll never be surpassed. Grey Lord Dave continues. He says, also more seriously, what suggestions would you give to someone who has never tried painting their own minis before but wanted to start?
Grey Lord Dave, I would suggest that you go and read an article that I wrote called The Psychology of Miniature Painting, where I talk about a little thing called the panic zone. Many people, when they first try a task, will go outside of their comfort zone into the zone of learning, which is where you start creating new neural pathways in your brain and you start to develop new skills. But if you go too far outside your comfort zone, you'll reach the panic zone, which is where you'll learn fuck all. And miniature painting is an example of an area where you can very, very quickly get into the panic zone if you try and do too much shit. So I would suggest start small, grab yourself a couple of the Games Workshop have a really good system. You know, they have base layers, they have washes, they have highlight colors. So grab yourself some of those, start small, start on a simple model, learn how paint comes off a brush, develop some brush control, develop some skills, step just outside of your comfort zone instead of, you know, picking up an airbrush and trying to paint Golden Demon winning entries from day dot. Baby steps, mate. That's the key.
One thing I'll throw into this as well that maybe will help you out a little bit as well. So I would be basically the definition of a rank amateur at painting, but I do have a few experiences I can relate. The first one was I decided I wanted to try painting something, and the first thing I painted was, I think, a Cador Jack, and I finished it, and I looked at it, and I was just like, man, this thing looks awful. and it basically did. and I took several years off, and then I was like, you know what, I want to try this again. And before doing it the next time, I ended up watching the P3 painting DVD and watched that. It gave me a few tips, some technique ideas, etc. And just from watching that little bit of instruction and getting some ideas on things to do, there was like a really big leap up in the difference between like that first juggernaut I did to the next Templar that I painted. And having a little bit of know-how goes a long ways when you're starting out.
Definitely agree with that. Another little topic I touch on in my article, Psychology of Miniature Painting. Fantastic article. Highly recommend it.
Where can they find this?
It's on a blog called Arcane Paintworks, Meg Maple's blog. There's a thing called skill ceiling and knowledge ceiling. When you're starting out, you've got a ceiling of zero on both of those. So you need to understand what you're doing, and so doing research, understanding how things interact and why we do things will increase your knowledge ceiling, which is vitally important. But if your knowledge ceiling increases too far but your skill ceiling doesn't go along with it, you'll have these great ideas in your brain, but you won't be able to program your hands into how to do them. So not only is it important to research and read and develop an understanding of what's happening, it's also vitally important to just fucking paint a lot and do it. So
that sounds like some good advice.
Oh, there's a cat there. Hello.
Yes, Lucy wants to say hello to you.
Hi, Lucy. I miss you.
Okay, so next question is from TMCG. He says, what kind of classes would you recommend for someone that's looking to improve?
TMCG, my man. Lots of great resources online at the moment. Patreon has a lot of awesome videos. Prior to COVID-19 fucking everyone, there was often a lot of classes available from international painters and I guess for you guys, just painters in America. They're all fantastic. They're all worthwhile, and going to any one of those classes is going to expand your knowledge. Meg Maples does an introductory class, like painting display level stuff, which is very, very, very good. It is actually probably the catalyst that started me on my painting journey that I'm on right now. But if you haven't got the opportunity to travel to a painting class, like most of us at the moment, Banshee Art Studio on Patreon is very good and sort of talks about a lot of the fundamentals, as does Ben Comets. So there's some good Patreons you could look into at the moment.
Awesome. So here's one that a follow-up question that he's teeing up for you right in your wheelhouse that you can expound a little bit on for us. He says, you talk about hard work and that it's not about talent. Can you explain that some more?
Oof, fuck. Can I? This is
right in your wheelhouse.
This is fucking dead. Look, I have a real issue with the word talent because I think that devalues effort. I certainly did not start painting like the masters, the great painters of old, and I'm sure those great painters of old didn't start painting like those painters of old either, to be honest. So the only way to get better at anything in life is to work hard at it. You know, I think in this age that we live in of instant gratification, of the ability to click a button and have something delivered to your house 30 minutes later, how good's Uber Eats, by the way, the ability to swipe right and pick yourself up a date very, very quickly. People have just lost the ability to work hard at things, and that's fundamental for achieving real, genuine success at not just painting, but life, is the ability to stick to something and understand that gradual improvement is what will give you the sustainable results. People sign up to Patreons, they fucking, you know, they pay money to get new brushes and, you know, buy into the hype of different manufacturers and promises, and then they do all this shit, and then it doesn't make them a better painter because they haven't spent the time. You've got to recognize that achieving success at any task is like climbing a mountain. You can see the top of the mountain, you can see where you want to go, but many people don't realize that the only way to get there is an arduous climb. So talent is not what will make you a better painter. Hard work, practice, perseverance, passion is what will get you to be a better painter. Get amongst it.
So I agree with everything that you said. I'm curious with a few related things or a few other thoughts I've had with it, if how you're going to feel with them or if you're going to agree with them. I do think that there are people that are more talented or more gifted in certain things, but even in those things, they have to work really hard in order to develop that talent. And I think that for myself, I think that I've chosen not to devote the time into painting, but I do believe that if I did devote the time to do that, I could start producing some models that look pretty good. It may, my absolute ceiling on the best models I could ever make if I really dedicate myself to that might be lower than some other people, and I also might learn a little bit slower than some other people, but sometimes it kind of feels like talent can maybe be like a gradient or a skill cap, but for most people, it feels like you're so far away from ever even realizing or hitting a talent cap that just start putting in the work, and you'll see a big change or improvement. So I'm curious, do you think that that's correct, or
no, how do you think that? There's obviously genetic things that some people start with a genetic predisposition towards, physical activity or heart conditions or a variety of things. So I definitely think that there is a degree of innate ability that some people come with, whether it's the ability to have steady hands. Some people have physical disabilities which prevents them from probably ever achieving high quality painting results. But I would suggest that many, many, many people use that as an excuse.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, not the physical disabilities, but the fact that some people are genetically better. I would think that it's very rare that anyone wouldn't have the ability to be a top level painter if they were willing to sacrifice the time and the effort and the energy. I use this example for in one of my articles and in one of my classes. I asked Gigantor one time, "Oh, mate, you're a fucking specimen. Like, you work out all the time. What's going on here? How do I start looking like you?" And he's like, "Well, I go to the gym every day, spend 2 hours in the gym in the morning, and sometimes go in the afternoon as well. And I strictly control my diet." So, like, anyone can look like Gigantor if they're willing if they're willing to do that, right? It's not about the fact that he's genetically predisposed towards looking like a fucking unit. It's because he's putting in the time and effort. So there are certainly people who start at a higher level, whether it's because of their, their ability to perceive colours or their ability to have a steady hand. But I think the majority of that stuff is trainable and teachable. So it's about effort for the most part. But I will agree with your statement with a caveat that I think it's probably less than most people would assume. People use that as an excuse to not get better.
Yeah, I would wholeheartedly agree with you as well. And I also, I guess another way that I sometimes think of it is that the people who one area where talent starts becoming a little bit more important is if you're in like the very highest echelons.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are, for example, an NBA player, everyone that's in the NBA has done a lot of work and they're all really good at playing basketball.
Yeah.
But the difference between some of them comes down a little bit to talent.
And you're talking about the top 0.001% of a population, right? And so that's probably a fair statement. But
I think that people fixate on that a little bit too much.
Correct. But I'll give you an example from a sport that probably not many people know of, which is called rugby league in Australia. there's a number of players in rugby league who, when they first started out, weren't in that probably upper bracket of talented players. We see a lot of players come through, athletically speaking, that are just, the absolute peak, wildly talented, got the world ahead of them in terms of what they could do. But in many times, those guys are the ones that don't go on to have successful careers. It's the ones that are the scrappers, the guys who are willing to just put in the effort, go to training every day, and probably one of the guys will go down as the greatest player of rugby league of all time. Started out as a very a player who didn't get very many raps, wasn't talked about as one of the most talented players of all time, but has pretty much broken every record in the game, and it's because he's a hard worker. So I think talent will get you somewhere in that upper echelon, but it's the people who are willing to work hard that'll be separated from the rest. NFL is probably, and basketball is probably an example where they all work hard, because if they don't, they wouldn't get to where they are, and that's where you'll see some variances from talent. But it's interesting.
Yeah, I guess another way to think about it is, or kind of related to what you just said, in some ways, I think there's some people who, if they're talented at something, or if it comes too easy to them, then sometimes they end up coasting on their talent versus someone who puts in the hard work and then ends up surpassing them because they've realized that this is something that I have to work hard at, this is something I have to develop, and that is kind of goes along with the rugby example you gave of then they end up using the hard work to propel themselves.
Correct. Yep. And probably if you ask a lot of professional elite sports people about it, they would tell you that sports is 95% mental.
Right.
As much as, you know, it's a physical endeavor, the mental side of the game is what will turn you into an elite athlete. So, interesting.
All right, so we've got another follow-up question from the same person. He says, outside of just painting more, what are other things that people can do to improve?
Paint some more, do a little bit more painting, and probably just get stuck in and paint. Now, look, truly, that is the number one thing that you need to do. As I talked about before, the skill ceiling and knowledge ceiling. You know, understanding what you're doing is important, but being able to actually physically put in the time is also as of much importance. And I think that's where most people go wrong, is they do all of the knowledge and they understand all of the things that they want to understand. And, you know, they're like, fuck yeah, I'm going to go do some painting now and I'm going to do this crazy technique that I just watched on a video and I know how to do now. But they haven't trained them, their body and their hands and their eyes to be able to physically do it. So, you know, that's why I say paint, because that's often the sticking point for people. It's very rarely the fact that people don't have enough knowledge with, you know, the access to the wealth of knowledge that we have at our fingertips these days. It's usually just stop fucking reading about painting and start painting. but yeah, look, there's some other things, you know, like look at painted models, painted paintings, in fact, just to understand the way that people use light and use color, and you know, looking at models is important. A really, really important one is actively seeking feedback on your models. You know, most people use social media to have other people on the internet provide them gratification about how good they are. I much prefer it when people are hypercritical about my work, because that's when you'll recognize your mistakes and be able to correct them. So actively seeking constructive criticism will definitely help you on your journey. But just don't be a soft cock, you know, just cop it on the chin and learn from it. Don't go into defend yourself and defend your decisions. That'll just end badly for everyone.
Two things for me to throw in here. One of them, this kind of bounced off of something that I heard you say, looking at other people's miniatures, but one of the things I've seen you talk about on Twitter is that when able to financially, you've tried to purchase models from mm-hmm. people that you admire and pieces that they've done that you admire. And mm-hmm. That seems kind of obvious when you think about it, but what sort of benefits have you received from it?
There's an element of me wanting to support those artists to help continue to create art. That's probably the main reason. Obviously, having a cool piece of art that I can look at anytime I want is awesome as well. And when I receive those models, I'll usually sit down with them for an hour or so. And just sort of look at the model, look at all of the various sections and how they did things and understand the color selections that they made and, you know, that sort of gear. So it's sort of helpful, but it's only helpful up to a point, particularly for that sort of standard, because sometimes I just look at them and go, I've got no fucking idea how you did that, mate. Like, I wish I knew. So usually I just jump on the socials or Messenger and actually ask them the question, how the fuck did you do that? So having the models in hand is potentially also demoralizing as you look at it and realize that you're not as far up the mountain as you thought you were.
one last thing I'll give as a recommendation on this, and this will probably be our last thing for this episode, is you mentioned practice and feedback, and that made me think of one thing I would recommend anyone who's interested in becoming better at painting would be to go listen to a podcast. It's Freakonomics episode 244, and the title of the episode is How to Become Great at Just About Anything. And they talk about scientific research behind deliberate practice and having coaching and stuff like that. And it'll give you an idea of, like, if your goal is really to become a better painter, this will give you scientific steps that you can follow to become great at almost anything. And it turns out painting is a subset of anything. So it's something I would recommend checking out. It's entertaining and also pretty informative.
I'm just looking at a transcript of that right now. I punched it into Google while you were talking. Yeah, that looks fucking bang on, mate. Bang on.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So we're going to pause there, and we've got some more great questions for the next episode. One of the ones I'm looking forward to is someone asking what your favorite Oz Machine memory is. But we'll pick up with that in the next episode that the Patreon supporters can listen to. And so first off, I want to thank the people who are supporting us on Patreon. You guys are awesome.
Thanks, legends.
Also, yeah, you guys are legends. Thank you, Trent, for sharing your time and sharing your expertise.
No worries, man.
And check out discountgamesinc.com. We have Privateer Press stuff at 30% off right now. And check out Muzon Minis for your gaming aids. And with that, thank you for listening, and everyone have a good day.
Toodaloo!